The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Tuesday, July 26, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the floor of the Democratic National Convention, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 2016. On the program today, well, lots of different folks. We're going to be talking about the convention and more. Matt will turn down the sound. Here's how it's going to work today, folks. Matt, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Pull down the sound a little bit, the music here. All right, so here's what's going to happen. I've done a couple of pre-tapes. I'm going to be doing a little bit more, and the show is just going to run a little bit differently. We're in Radio Row, which is sort of the bowels. Not quite the bowels. I'm not sure what the exact metaphor would be. Sort of a strange circular. I mean, so we're not really... I don't know. It's not, we're not really an appendage. I'm just going to go with the bowels. And of the Wells Fargo Center. The best part is, of course, we get the free money. They just handed it out. The bank is a publicity stunt. Handed it out to everybody at Radio Row. But we will comment on the speech. Last night I was on the Young Turks. Matt is going to fire up an interview I just did with Cenk and Anna. Just moments ago, and I'll be back in just a moment after that. Our coverage of the Democratic National Convention 2016, sitting with me now on Radio Row in the cheap seats relative to where they usually seat, ladies and gentlemen, the two titans of the Young Turks.
I like that.
Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian are here. They have been covering, this is the second convention in a row you've been covering. Isn't that right, Anna?
I did not attend the 2012 conventions, but I was there in 2008, and this is my second convention.
But I mean, you were at the Republican
convention. Oh, that's what you meant. Yeah, I was at the RNC, which was very different from what we've experienced at the DNC so far,
yeah,
thankfully.
I can imagine. All right, we'll get into that in a minute. But Cenk, last night, sat in with you guys, the two of you, and Jimmy Dore, who apparently, down to our actual make of our suit and the color of it, are identical. Give me a sense of what took place yesterday, because I thought it was an incredibly dynamic day.
Yeah. So there's a couple of different layers to last night. As the Republican convention was themed around fear, make America fear again, this was make America hope again. And so there was a lot of hope, and we're going to have better days, and we will rise in Cory Booker's speech. But that was throughout almost all the speeches. If anything, I would say that it was a little too soft, and I would have wanted to hit Trump a little harder. But then Elizabeth Warren came on and hit him pretty hard. Al Franken did a great job of hitting him with humor and then with serious facts. So it started to pick up when Franken came. But obviously the big story was how are the Bernie Sanders supporters going to react? And that was a mixed bag. So after you left, something interesting happened, Sam. So we did the Bernie speech at the very end, and he mainly talked about the revolution, and the crowd was ecstatic. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, that applause for him when he first came on that lasted several minutes was amazing. Yeah. I've never seen anything like that at any convention. And especially for the guy who didn't win.
Right.
Right. And then he turned in the last one third of the speech to Hillary Clinton's good and then mixed reaction. And then Jordan Chariton, our reporter, was on the floor afterwards and interviewed a bunch of Bernie Sanders delegates. And they were not having it. And one of them said, now he wants us to jump off a cliff. Well, I'm not going to do it. And out of the four people that he put a mic in front of, three of them were saying that they were not going to support Hillary Clinton.
Okay. And all right, well, let me throw this out there. So 75% in a very unscientific study.
Oh, the most unscientific sample we've ever done.
Of the of the subset of Bernie delegates who came in skeptical, which I think is also a much smaller subset, right? I mean, if you measure it by how many people were booing, I think we're in like the tens, if maybe 100. And
I think we're in the hundreds on the booing. I was on the floor when we first started. It was definitely in the hundreds. But you're right, because the delegates are the most excited about Bernie Sanders. That's why they're Bernie Sanders delegates.
Right.
So it's the minority of the minority. I totally get that.
And so does that matter beyond the fact that, you know, I was watching the MSNBC coverage at that point, and that's all they were doing. They were looking for those 10 people. They probably interviewed the same four. For that same response. I mean, does it matter beyond that?
I think it does matter. And I think that the numbers are actually larger than you guys are both, making it seem like. And the reason why it matters is because right now I'm actually extremely concerned that Trump is going to win. And part of the reason why he's going to win is because there's, you know, some chunk of Bernie Sanders supporters that do not feel like Hillary Clinton is willing to even meet them halfway on some of the progressive issues. Now, she's changed her rhetoric when it comes to some policy ideas, including minimum wage and free public college, but they don't really believe her because she needs to put some action behind those words. Okay, and so I'm concerned that nothing is going to convince these individuals to vote for Hillary Clinton. I'm not a huge Hillary Clinton fan or supporter, but under this, you know, illusion of choice that we have with our, you know, system of government, I would much rather have her as our next president than Donald Trump.
Now, okay, let me ask you, is there any data to support the notion that it's more than this? I mean, I've seen Pew polling coming out saying that 90% of Bernie Sanders supporters are already supporting Clinton already.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen another that says 75%. By any metric, if you measure that polling, whether you take the 75% number or the 90% number, which seems to me impossibly high,
right?
Frankly, because at this stage in 2008, there was something like not even, I think like 30% of Clinton supporters said they wouldn't vote for Obama, and they obviously did. And so, A, why do you think it's bigger? And then let me ask you, the B is like, do you think their assessment that Hillary Clinton hasn't met them halfway is accurate? I get that it's only rhetoric. I don't know what a presidential candidate can do beyond rhetoric.
So I want to be clear about something. I have a bias against polls. I take polls with a grain of salt. I also saw a poll that said only 55% of Sanders supporters plan on voting for Hillary Clinton. So, you know, the polls vary so much that how can you take them that seriously? But in terms of Hillary Clinton's actions and whether or not she's met them halfway, sure, she's met them halfway in terms of rhetoric, but then she goes ahead and decides that Tim Kaine is the best VP for her when he is in favor of TPP, he is absolutely centrist, and he doesn't represent progressive ideas. Another thing that I think really slaps Bernie Sanders supporters in the face is the fact that the email leak comes out and Debbie Wasserman Schultz steps down, and the first thing that Hillary Clinton does is she names Debbie Wasserman Schultz as her honorary chair. I mean, that, again, is a slap in the face for Bernie Sanders supporters. So if she genuinely wants to portray this idea that she is going to fight for progressives, then she can't go ahead and send mixed signals and be a mixed bag when it comes to issues like this. She has to show that she is a fighter, that she's strong, that she's aggressive, and that she genuinely is progressive. And unfortunately, she hasn't proven that for a lot of people.
Now, let me ask you this. Okay, so Tim Kaine, she says, and they make a big deal of leaking it. Again, it's all rhetoric, right? I mean, because the real issue is going to be what happens in the lame duck. And I thought Bernie Sanders made a specific point last night during his speech, and that was not scripted, to point out the lame duck. Like, he threw that in.
Oh, that was not scripted.
Moment.
That's I did not know that.
That was scripted.
Because that's the reason. Can I just say real quick? The reason that's super relevant is, Hillary Clinton would not have wanted that in the speech because she's actually for the TPP. That's why we don't believe her. We know she's for the TPP. You know it. Everybody knows it. That's why she wouldn't want that in Bernie Sanders' speech, and they vet his speech, unlike the Trump idiots who don't vet any speech. So he would have to put that in unscripted, and that's him going, yeah, no, I really am against the TPP.
I actually think that he dropped that in the moment. Like, I don't mean that it wasn't scripted in that it was a release thing. I think he was responding to somebody in the crowd, and he brought up that aspect of it as if it was almost like, oh, yeah, this is a good opportunity for me to do this. Because, look, the bottom line is I don't think the TPP, regardless of what's genuinely in Hillary Clinton's heart at this point, she's made such a show of it. She made her vice president vow publicly, and it leaked it in private, that he wouldn't support the TPP anymore. And frankly, the dynamic is such that they're not going to give Hillary trade. You know, the Republicans are still going to control the Congress. They're not going to vote for Hillary trade. They're not going to vote for anything.
No, Sam, I really disagree. So number one, she knows that Obama is going to do everything in his power to do it in the lame duck session.
That's right.
So that she won't have to go back on her promise. She is pro-TPP. Take it to the bank. I will bet any amount of money on it. So here's how she gets out of it. She gets out of it by having Obama do her the favor of doing the lame duck. Number two, if for some reason that doesn't work, she just goes, oh, we made it better. This isn't the old TPP. This is the new TPP.
Well, all right, let me push back on this. And you and I actually had an argument a year and a half ago. You said the TPP was a done deal.
That's right. And it is. Well, and it is. I maintain that 100%.
Well, here's my argument as to the value of having your presidential candidate and the vice presidential candidate make a big show about being against it. It gives very little room for congresspeople who are reelected in 2 years to vote. It gives very little, particularly with Trump. Now, Trump is also a factor here. If you're a Republican or a Democrat, you're going to pay a price to vote for it. And because he's become such a big issue. So I'm a little hesitant that, but look, it doesn't matter what Tim Kaine is for or against the TPP if Hillary Clinton has a secret agenda to push the TPP. And I think, like, look, it is, we've never had a president that has not pushed one of these trade deals, Republican or Democrat. I have no doubt that Donald Trump would also push for the TPP. He doesn't care either,
right,
frankly. So putting that that aside, I think there is value in the rhetoric because it at least is a leverage point, right? We saw this in net neutrality.
True, but look, we talk about the political ramifications of making promises and not following through on those promises, but think about the Obama administration. Think about, you know, campaign Obama in 2008 and all the very specific things that he promised, including, a better healthcare system that we have in place right now. And then as soon as he started, you know, fighting for Obamacare, he was extremely weak. He didn't fight for a public option, and he didn't have to suffer any political ramifications as a result of that. He got elected for a second term. So I don't really buy into this thing about, oh, well, she promised it, and she has to keep her promise because if she doesn't, they'll elect her out of office. I'm not buying it. I feel like we have very short-term memory, and I feel like we keep falling for this, you know, pick the lesser of two evils game, which, you know, in this election, we do have to pick the lesser of two evils because one candidate is a disaster for the country. But I just feel like politicians get away with making promises they don't follow through on.
I think that's true. I mean, with that said, also, we have now millions of people on Medicaid who were not on Medicaid 8 years ago.
True. I mean, there are good parts of Obamacare.
True.
I mean,
yeah,
millions upon millions of
it's true. The Heritage Foundation. The Heritage Foundation came up with a pretty good plan. God bless their hearts.
I mean, it wasn't really, but yes, it's better than, frankly, it's better than what preceded it.
Yes, agreed. Congratulations to Obama. He got the Republican position from the 1990s into effect in 2010 as a Democratic position. Okay, it's a mild win. But let me be realistic about when rhetoric matters and doesn't matter. Because I'm not in the camp that it never matters or it always matters. So, for example, with the minimum wage, it does matter, in my opinion. Because Bernie kept saying 15. And Hillary was like, wow, I thought I was out there with 12 because Obama was at 10 and the real minimum wage is $7.25. By Sanders pressing on it and pressing on it, they have moved it all the way to 15, which means that when they go to compromise, they might compromise at 10 or 12 instead of 8 or 9.
Right. And in the meantime, too, though, I mean, we've also seen the wildcat strikes. We've seen numerous cities and states that have raised it to 15.
And they raise it to 15.
Yeah.
So, and that's one of the best parts of Bernie Sanders' speeches is they said it was impossible, and we already did it. We did it in Seattle, New York, and the list goes on and on. So, so that's where rhetoric matters, and I'm with you. There are other places where rhetoric does not matter because there's too much money on the line. So here I'll give you an example of a place where I was wrong. Keystone XL. I thought they would do that for sure, and they didn't. So I don't give Obama – I give Obama some credit because he's the one who ultimately made the decision, but I give activists a tremendous amount of credit because, honestly, I was skeptical that activists could move them on that issue, but they did. But Keystone XL is about largely just one or a couple of companies, and so I thought they would be powerful enough and there was enough billions of dollars on the line. With TPP, there is trillions of dollars on the line. It involves almost every multinational corporation. They are not going to lose under any circumstance.
And to take your your side of this argument, the reality with Keystone, largely, it seems to me, was that the price of oil dropped such that extracting it from the tar sands no longer was as profitable as it was when oil was at 100 plus
such
a barrel,
a great
and
point.
TransCanada didn't really care as much, and the stakes were just not as high. I mean, TPP, I mean, the Keystone XL is one of those things that we could very well see, you know, 5 years down the road if oil goes back up to those levels. But
To ruin it on the one thing that I thought activists
won. I know,
won.
I took your side of that argument. But I'm going to take the opposite side on TPP, only insofar as that, like, look, there's a lot of money involved in it, no doubt. I just think that we're going to enter into an era, assuming that Hillary Clinton gets elected, that is going to be, I think, even more polarized, frankly, than what we've been through over the past, let's say, 6 years.
I don't agree. And I'll tell you why. And that's one of the reasons I wanted Bernie Sanders to win and not Hillary Clinton. Because I think Hillary Clinton is even more right-wing than Barack Obama. That's why I wanted Obama instead of Clinton in 2008. And so I think she will reach a shocking amount of consensus, quote-unquote shocking amount of consensus with the Republicans, with things that Republicans agree on. So they'll agree on TPP, they'll agree on tax cuts for corporations. Oh, but we got rid of the loopholes, etc. So in the first 100 days, oh, the mainstream media will be ecstatic with bipartisan support. Hillary Clinton did it! As if she got the Republicans to agree on anything. No, she will just go out and agree with the Republicans and get the deals. So yes, in the beginning, you'll have a lot of agreement, and then they'll get back into stonewalling, and then they'll do nothing after the first 100 days.
But don't you think Obama tried to do that and failed in his first couple of years?
Yeah, so I disagree with Cenk a little bit, because one thing that I've noticed about, you know, Republicans in Congress is even if our president is proposing legislation that they would agree with under any other circumstance, they want to be polarized. They don't want to agree.
They can't take yes for an answer.
They do not want to agree.
They just don't want to give. They don't care what it is. If Obama is offering it, they don't want to give Obama a win.
That's exactly right, which is why they gave him such a tough time with Obamacare, which was, again, legislation that was modeled after the health care plan in Massachusetts. It was a conservative plan, and Republicans fought it tooth and nail. It was insane. So I feel like the same thing might happen or is likely to happen with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, we're disagreeing in shades here, because I think it's almost always comes back to the money. So it's the Koch brothers and the libertarians being overly greedy. The Chamber of Commerce would have taken the grand bargain and would have been thrilled with it.
There's no doubt the Chamber of Commerce would, but it also really speaks to what's happening with the Republican Party and where the power has shifted. Electorally, at the end of the day, these guys cannot do the bidding of the Chamber of Commerce if they're not in Congress. And their electorate has some very narrow ideas about what has to happen. Things like the polling for Republican voters is just through the roof on, we don't want you to compromise. Democrats, you poll Democrats, they want you to compromise. You and I, the three of us, may not appreciate that perspective, but broadly speaking, that's what Democrats want to do. Just make it work and come to some type of compromise. All right, so let's get back to a moment. You were upset because, Cenk, that there wasn't enough hitting of Trump. Anna, let me ask your perspective on this, and then yours, Cenk. what should the agenda for this convention be? We've seen one quarter of it now pass. What should the agenda, like, what do the Democrats need slash want at the end of this?
They need to highlight ways that Hillary Clinton differs from Donald Trump and the ways Hillary Clinton is similar to Bernie Sanders. I think that it's important to reach out to progressives and reach out to the Democratic base and say, hey, you know what? Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are not the same. There's this idea out there among Sanders supporters especially that, oh, if we, you know, elect Trump or if we elect Hillary Clinton, we're going to get the same thing. No, you're not going to get the same thing. And that needs to be made clear. I agree with Cenk that the attacks need to be a little more aggressive. And there's so much to attack Trump on. I've noticed that a lot of the produced videos throughout the first night of speeches were excellent. They attacked Trump in such a effective way. And I need some of the speakers to do the same. They really need to bring it home and show that Trump is a complete and utter nightmare. And, you know, look, a lot of the hope and change speeches are nice, but I feel like people are reacting in a negative way toward them. Part of the reason why is because we've heard the same thing over and over and over again. And right now, the American people do not trust these politicians. They need to be better about highlighting policy ideas. They need to be better about highlighting what they have accomplished. And again, just emphasize how much better Hillary Clinton is than Donald Trump.
I think the Republicans did not calibrate the RNC well enough. But I might be wrong because it looks like they got at least a 7-point bump out of it. Because I would have given, if I was in their position, I would have given 75% fear because that is their go-to move. I get it. But I would have given 25% hope. And you know what? I would do the same exact thing if I was the Democrats. And they've got it flipped around. They've got 75% hope, 25% fear. No, no. If this election is about Hillary Clinton, we will lose. If this election is about Donald Trump, we will win. So you have to keep it real. Don't go push past all the people saying, oh, you're not talking about your candidate enough. Like, did the Republicans care about that? They didn't give a damn about that. They're like, no, we will attack mercilessly. And they got a 7 to 10 point bump out of it. So, look, Hillary Clinton, it is very hard for her to convince people that she's looking out for the average person. Because she hasn't been. Her whole life, she's looked out for giant multinational corporations, from sitting on the board of Walmart all the way through to almost all of her policies. So income inequality, that's her bread and butter. She was part of the system that gave us income inequality, and everybody knows it. So stop talking about her, because every time you do, it rings hollow. Instead, go, this loser, Donald Trump, who bankrupted himself 6 times, is going to bankrupt us. This idiot owes a lot of money to the Russians and is now selling our country, selling not just our country, but Estonia off to the Russians. What a pathetic loser.
Do you think, I mean, though, two things that occurred to me. One is, I was sitting with you when that woman who came out, and I don't know what disease she had, but disabled.
Anastasia.
Talked about the sort of direct relationship she had with Hillary Clinton, as an example of something that humanized Hillary Clinton in a way, and drew the contrast. Not by criticizing Trump per se, although they did lead up to that with the video of him mocking a disabled person, but did it by sort of enhancing Clinton's stature. And I would also ask you, do you think there's room to get higher unfavorables on Donald Trump?
Yes.
In other words, like, are there if you're going to move anything 5 or 10%, do you have a better shot humanizing Hillary Clinton by 5 or 10% versus taking 10% off of Donald Trump?
So, okay, let me address that. So, number one, you're right. When we were doing together, Anastasia, the woman who was disabled, gave a great speech humanizing Hillary Clinton. Good. That's the 25% where I want you to humanize Hillary Clinton and give us hope and all that wonderful stuff. But if I'm in a competition with someone else and the charge against me is that I'm bombastic, I am not going to talk about that almost at all because it is true. Right. So I am instead going to be bombastic and attack the other person. So don't go towards your weakness. Go towards your strength. And is there room to tear down Donald Trump 5-10 points? Abso-frickin-lutely. Sam, so where's his weakness? His weakness is that he's got all these angry white males who think, oh, yeah, he might be this, he might be that. But he's a winner and he's going to get it done. if you convince those guys he's not a winner, he's actually pathetic. He's a loser. He's a sad, sad guy who's so insecure. And if you get those guys once or twice to laugh at him, it's done. You win the election. Don't worry about anything else. Don't worry. Don't get into all this overthinking it. Shred him. Destroy him. Make him look pathetic. Talk about his hair plugs, and you'll win the election.
I think Cenk is special, and I don't mean that in a patronizing way at all. And what I mean
sounded
by that
hilarious.
No. But what I mean by that is Cenk is an aggressive fighter, and you unfortunately don't represent most Democratic voters from my perspective. Most Democratic voters are, you know, they want peace, they want love. I mean, I'll give you an example, and this is just an anecdote. You know, we got attacked by a madman during the last night of the RNC, and I got angry, and I said a word that I shouldn't have said about his
girth.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, a lot of our fans who are supportive of us and do not like Alex Jones were like, hey, you know what? You shouldn't have used that word. I really didn't like that. And so even when Republicans are wrong, if you punch them in the face, you know, verbally or whatever, they don't react positively to that. I think that you need a mix of both. I think you need to be aggressive in attacking Trump and show that he is a loser, right? But you also have to mix in those moments that humanize Hillary Clinton, because for the progressives that are turned off to her, they want those moments of seeing her as a human as opposed to a political robot.
75-25. And so I get it, and liberals have a conscience, conservatives don't. In that same interaction, he called us all the worst names you've ever heard. His supporters are like, that's fine. Yeah. Right? There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
Okay, but I can't believe you used the word fat. It's totally disingenuous. I get it. Those are the two different sides. But look, you're not... The biggest thing you have to do is not convince Democrats, because Democrats are going to be...
Do you think Bloomberg's going to be effective tonight?
No, because they're going in the wrong direction, okay?
You're saying they're going for the people in the middle as opposed to getting the progressive base?
So you're not going
to... I mean, Bloomberg's there to draw that contrast. He is going to say... The subtext of what he's saying is, I don't agree with Hillary on everything, but Donald Trump is a danger to all of us. Okay. And I'm speaking to everybody who is sitting in their Park Avenue apartments, and you better mobilize against this because you'll lose everything if Donald Trump becomes president.
Look, let's talk about the three different buckets. She's going to get the overwhelming majority of Democrats, even as Bernie Sanders supporters are disaffected, et cetera. But you're probably not going to reach them, but you're going to get the majority. Overwhelming majority. Okay, then you've got the very few centrist Republicans who are businessmen and who think, I can make a deal with Hillary Clinton, and Donald Trump gives me instability that I'm not in favor of. Bloomberg's going to appeal to those guys, but there's 17 of those guys in the country. Now, all 17 are donors, so that will help her donations. But the guys you really want is you want to break off 10 to 25%, and that's too ambitious a number. 7% might do it for you. Of the guys who work in a mill in Ohio and Pennsylvania, who drink beer at night and go, God damn this and God damn that. I know that guy, okay? In some ways, I am that guy.
Have you ever voted for Democrats?
Yeah, when it's a populist. A lot of those guys voted in Montana for Brian Schweitzer. So when you get a populist Democrat who comes out there in a lumberjack outfit and goes, I'm going to kick some ass and I got a 2x4, but I'm going to kick that ass for you. They go, yeah, goddamn right. And you know what you need them to think here? They're never going to root for Hillary Clinton. Don't get me wrong. What you need them to think is, like I said earlier, sitting there going, you know, I used to think Trump was a winner, but look at this guy. And I mean, that's so sad that he ran from Vietnam, then he hides behind veterans.
Yes.
You know, And why does he keep losing? Well, I mean, why did you lose with 6 different businesses? Maybe that guy's a freaking loser. Forget it. I'm not going to vote.
He's sad.
Good. Mission accomplished.
Very, very sad.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Round 2.
I had to do that for the sake of just for a moment for everybody. Cenk Uygur, Anarchist Baron, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see what the rest of the week does.
All right. Thank you for
having
us.
All right. Awesome. Thank you, Sam.
I am back. I just tried to get Al Franken. He just walked by.
Oh no.
Yes.
What happened?
I just should have chased him. It literally just at the second that the interview went, he just walked by.
So I don't know. I'm trying.
Chase
I'm
him. I'll vamp for you if you want to go chase him. Go chase him.
All right. I'll see. Yeah. I think you may. I'll be right back.
Yeah. Go
I'll
run.
Be right back. All right.
I felt like Sam slipped in a decent Alex Jones impression there at the end.
He's just a bit too far off, Mike.
I can't believe that people were giving Anna a hard time about what she said. You know what's great? Phil, my co-host on Two Dope Boys, watched that clip, and he was just like, he goes, your friends at the Young Turks must be really evolved people, man, because I would have already punched Alex Jones like on entry of my set. He's like, are you crazy?
Yeah. That's what I said to Matt, is that Jenks showed a lot of restraint because Alex Jones kept touching him, and
he was touching him. They first you invade their scent, right? And it's set to begin with, which is already a violation. And then, as you say, yeah, he kept touching him.
I mean, and that's just a way to provoke someone. And he wasn't, Jenks wasn't responding to it. It wasn't until Anna came into the picture, and then she started getting insulted, and then he.
Well, Jenks also got pissed off by that shirt.
Okay, he was pissed off by everything. Yeah, but he was
and then Saudi Arabia thing is when he almost decked
him. And Anna came at the same moment. Okay. And then it just was like off the rails, which it should have been from the
Jimmy
start.
Jimmy Dore took care of business, though. I've seen the latest version. Jimmy, I think Jimmy might have gotten Alex's face on the sideline a little bit. He's getting
really?
a lot of attention from that. As Jimmy texted me last night, said sorry, not sorry, because all the Alex Jones people are now running headlines like
I'm back.
You back? How did that go?
It didn't go well. I ran down the hall. I could not find him.
Oy.
He went off.
Okay.
Hold on for 1 second. I think
yes.
Hold on for 1 second.
Yep. It would be great if Al Franken was just literally like circumambulating the floor just to mess with Sam. It's like, I already gave my speech.
It's like hiding behind the plant.
Just like, let me see if Sam can see where I am now.
Oh, I'm behind this fern for a good reason.
Okay. So he sort of just disappeared into the ether.
Okay.
It's been really difficult. None of the guests can make it to the convention center. The convention center is, it's not even the convention center, it's the Wells Fargo Center. And
okay.
it is like the functional equivalent. I mean, this is not going to make sense to anybody outside of New York, but it's like having the convention at the Meadowlands. Like,
oh, that's
so
a while out.
It's a way out. It's not convenient for anybody, which cuts both ways, because you don't feel like, oh, I'm the only one who it takes like 40 minutes for it to get here. But the downside of that is that nobody can get here and nobody wants to be here at noon because the main program happens later and you can't leave easily. So a lot of people either pretend they can't get here or just decide not to show up until later. And then the other thing is that the DNC, and this is sort of gross, I mean, I understand, and there are times I have taken Uber. That's all well and good. But it appears that they're not letting, this is what I've been told, taxis have the same access to this site as they are Uber. Now, I took a taxi this morning. I use that Wait to Ride app, which is a little buggy, but okay. And I just told the guy, just drive right in there, man. Don't listen to anything they tell you. And I'll just flash my badge and make
right.
it seem like I'm...
Right,
and
right,
he did.
Right.
But apparently other taxis can't get in. So it's very odd.
That
this
is
an
really
odd
weird.
Time to be here.
Well, but, what's your... Do you have, like, a snapshot from what you thought of everything that went down last night, including, I thought, in some ways, Sarah was speaking for you?
Sarah, I did not tell her what to say.
That literally crossed my mind. I was like, did he actually text that to Sarah? But no, she was clearly vamping.
I did text her to remember she's playing to the TV, not to the audience, like to ignore. Because it was testy. Like, I can tell you, yesterday was an incredibly dynamic day, right. I thought. And you had... And tell me if my sound, how my sound is coming through.
Why did you just go up?
Oh, well, because I
that wasn't
I
bad. I can fix it here.
Okay, you can fix it.
Okay.
Now you're fine.
It just sounded like I was off mic a little bit on the Young Turks interview.
Yeah.
Does that sound gone away now?
Yeah, it's a little. If you can give me a little bit more volume here, it might go up for a little bit.
Okay. How about that?
That's better.
Okay. So, it was an incredibly dynamic day, and I'm trying to get in touch with Dan, who I was texting. It's very hard to just connect with people here. But Dan was at the Debbie Wasserman Schultz thing. He was at the Bernie delegates situation, and the Bernie delegates were booing Bernie at his speech, basically saying, like, I'm supporting Clinton.
Right.
And there is, I've talked to a few. In fact, there's a guy running for office who's here who I think is one of those guys who will not give up the ghost. Should I have him hop on?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, hold on.
I think you're trying to not be cucks for the Democratic Party, Sam.
I'm just not clear at this point what the game plan is, but hold on for one second.
Yeah, yeah, see. This will be good. I think hopefully we can get all of these. Yeah, got it. Hopefully we can get all of these debates out of the way by the end of this week. I know that that's like an impossibility.
I was impressed that Cenk has a much longer fuse than Karl Rove apparently does.
Okay. So here is, I was talking to this gentleman yesterday. He had just come back from the Bernie Sanders delegate meeting. Dave Sparks, he is running for state rep in Ohio's 43rd district.
Dave Sparks.
He has actually a really smart T-shirt as I'm looking at it now. He's a U.S. veteran. He graduated from Wright State, and he's a strong advocate for the middle class. And it's all in the T-shirt. It's actually brilliant, David, I have to tell you, like as I'm sitting here. All right. I was just talking about how there's a lot of Bernie delegates who, and I don't know how many, but particularly at the time I spoke to you yesterday afternoon, mm-hmm. who were having none of it.
Yeah.
Tell us why.
Well, you know, each person's only going to be able to, to speak for themselves.
Right.
But I think a lot of people in different ways have felt unwelcome. To be honest with you, I have a lot of people who had said, man, we're getting the stink eye from the establishment at the hotel and the hotel breakfasts. And with that on top of the whole WikiLeaks thing that just came out, which we're getting like, oh, it's just a Russian hacker. That's just Vladimir Putin trying to insert himself into the election. But I asked, well, were they accurate? Ultimately, that's the most important thing.
Right.
Were they accurate? And everyone said, well, yeah. And so, we can go back months and months and months of how, we had people dropped off the rolls, different chicanery, announcing that Hillary's the winner, before the California primary was even over. That just the sum total of months and months of this kind of treatment, when they really should be saying, oh my God, how did you guys do this? We've never gotten a call from from our local party, and we have more people involved in our movement locally than exists in our local party.
You guys have a tremendous amount. Now, all right, but everything I've just heard you say, mm-hmm. okay, has been about process.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely, it is not hard to substantiate the condescension, I think, that's there from of the establishment.
We had people saying they were going to revoke delegate privileges for showing a TPP sign in the
But
sign.
I think also just sort of like the general treatment. There's a disdain mm-hmm. for this. All that, I think, is true. I don't happen to think that the stuff that the DNC engaged in cost Bernie the election. I don't think it did. I was saying a year ago, they clearly are doing what they can to a certain extent to help mm-hmm. Clinton, which I don't think was that much that they could do. In fact, I think some of the things they did backfire. But everything you're talking about have nothing to do with policy, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm.
or the governance of the country mm-hmm. or the future of our politics.
Okay.
How do you respond to that?
That everything the Bernie people have a problem with?
Well,
has
just,
nothing
I mean,
to do with
you
the,
I just asked you, like, what the dynamic was, and you went from getting the stink eye.
Yeah.
Where the DNC clearly was putting their thumbs on the scale. Throughout, there's been some voter disenfranchisement. There's been calling elections too early. All that, I'll stipulate to grant. Even if all that's true, none of those are you talking about policy or how or what happens to the country after November 8th.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just asking you, like, how do you respond to that observation?
Well, there's lots of other actual policies that we've had a problem with. You know, we would like to see the ban on fracking completely. You know, that's a policy issue because, number one, it increases global warming, which there's not a whole lot of. We should be in an emergency mode. The establishment of the Democratic Party should be in an emergency mode screaming and protesting along with us at climate change rallies because this is something that is...
It's going to affect everybody,
yeah, and,
without a doubt.
And physics has no time for politics. It doesn't care about the arguments.
So there's
one issue of many, many.
Right. I mean, all right, so fracking, for instance, and I agree with you as well. I mean, but... When faced with the difference between Trump and Clinton, you have one guy who, aside from his personal view, who knows? Mm-hmm. He denies the existence of global climate change. He has to, because mm-hmm. that's where his voting power are. Whereas Clinton's voters are either at, we need to curtail fracking, or we need to ban fracking, mm-hmm. right? Theoretically. I mean... So ultimately, doesn't that type of dynamic, and I think we go down the line. I mean,
there's definitely a big difference between the two candidates. No one's denying that. We have no love for Donald Trump. I mean, there may be some outlier, someone's able to interview somewhere and says, oh, you know, I'm switching to Trump. But, you know, the vast majority of the Sanders coalition people I know are very tuned into issues. There's a vast difference between those two candidates. That being said, Ms. Clinton, I think, represents on a kind of meta scale for a lot of people the entire system that they want to bring down, that system that is concentrated on constant surveillance, constant regime changes, forever war, an economy that is completely based on infinite growth based upon finite resources.
Mm-hmm.
And so we see that we're going to have to deal with these things when the most of these Democratic establishment are going to be dead and gone, but they're leaving us a world where, oh, you're going to fight. We've just decided that you're going to fight forever. You're going to abide by these things, and we're going to have to deal with the consequences of them. So I think a lot of people think that the system that promotes the inequality, the rapacious consumption, all of that kind of stuff needs to be brought down. And as soon as this election is over, we're going straight into local politics. We are organizing to do that. And so this election is just a small part of the broader movement, what we're trying to do. And so
give me your sense of, like, last night where we had people yelling at Elizabeth Warren.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, or where do we go from here, I guess I should ask you. Like, I mean, do you think you as a Bernie delegate who was upset about, where are you at? Let me just take your temperature in terms of where you are in terms of, like...
I have a lot more experience in observing politics. I've worked in journalism for many years, and so a lot of the things that I've seen in this campaign, I said, oh, yeah, I knew that was going to happen.
Right.
I told you guys it was going to happen about a year ago. Just by being an observer, knowing kind of how the system works a little bit more, but I think a lot of people who got into it for the first time were just like, holy moly, this is how it works. You mean I'm not actually voting on a candidate? I'm voting on a person to go vote for a candidate for me? That kind of whole, I think that was probably maybe one of the best things about this campaign was Bernie, like, pulling the curtains open on the American democratic, democratic process or rot, however you want to describe it.
So what happens next? I mean, what do you do? What are those people that you came across and that you've organized in Ohio? What do you think they do?
Oh, they're going to be running for city council. They're going to be running for school board. They're going to be running for state representative, state senate, Congress. They're going to be running for Democratic Central Committee in their counties. And so we're also forming progressive caucuses. I know at least in Ohio, we've got the Cuyahoga County Progressive Caucus, the Columbus Progressive Caucus, and Montgomery County Progressive Caucus. I know there's another one in Cincinnati, but I don't want to
Do
say
you
their name,
in Ohio?
Because I don't know what their name is yet.
Do you attempt to do what you can to help Hillary Clinton win in Ohio? I mean, Ohio is it's the state in many respects,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's going to be. I think Ms. Clinton, to a certain extent, that's kind of on her. I mean, you can go out and evangelize to certain to people, but. The trade issue.
I mean, she
issue,
can't
the,
do
the
it.
Trade
she can't literally.
So, of course, she can't go door to door and door to door and knock herself. Yeah, but I think she
Where
can come
she's
out on
at
some issues.
In terms of her policies yeah. now, do you think you go out and ensure her victory, or what do you do? Like, how do you calculate this?
Well, the other choice is so blatantly repugnant. That and I always tell people, Donald Trump saying that he's going to renege on U.S. debt, well, that could mean food riots in a week because the Treasury bond market could flop overnight due to complete lack of confidence and people pulling out. And so if you have someone that stupid in the White House to say something that completely irresponsible, that could affect millions of people's lives overnight and crash our economy. And so that's enough really to tell people, and they're like, oh. Really? I didn't know that. Like, yeah. I've listened to a couple, probably two or three Trump speeches all the way through, the completely ad-lib things that he does.
Disturbing.
What's that?
Disturbing.
It is disturbing, but I tell you what, I did it while I was, washing dishes and, cleaning up around the house. There was a lot of it that was really entertaining.
Yeah.
And then, because he's got that kind of, just stream of consciousness radio host thing going on when he's doing his speeches. And so he gets that, and then he gets into the whole thing. I don't give a damn about what anyone right. says about me. People eat that up. They love that. And then he goes into the trade thing, which really, really, really sells and hits home in the Midwest with the conversation we had right. yesterday, because so many people are, having to, literally living where they don't have enough food to make it through the month.
So do you think we're going to hear more from more booze tonight, or do you think people are basically, after the roll call, are going to sort of slide into some measure of at least sort of what the next chapter is?
I think we're going to go towards the next chapter. We're going to go vote. We're going to place our votes for Senator Sanders. And then we're going, we've got candidates to get elected locally in this election, a few in Ohio. And then we've got another.
You got a website?
Yes, it is.
VoteDavidSparks.org. VoteDavidSparks.org. Spelled like it sounds. David, I got to jump, but I appreciate you coming over.
Thank you very much, Sam. You have a great day.
Really great T-shirt. I wish every single one of my guests sat down with that.
Great guy. I mean, look.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you.
Everybody loves David Sparks. I mean, it's true.
So that was, it was interesting. David approached me with another member of the Ohio delegation and was like, even yesterday, the tone has changed. And so it's interesting to take the temperature of people who have been out there. Now, again, he also, I think, not as new to the democratic process, so in some ways harder to disillusion him.
right, because some of the people that they were finding to go on, like the Young Turks and on MSNBC last night, were clearly not only at their first convention, this was their first sustained engagement of any sort of politics.
Yeah,
and it genuinely shocked them. How can you be insulting her policy and saying that she's not necessarily trustworthy and then endorse her versus realizing, like, actually that basically happens in every single primary cycle.
Correct. Like,
that is, or right. even being upset that he got the last speaking slot when that's a good speaking slot.
Well, actually, you
know, although he got pushed out of prime time, what was that about?
My speculation is that they you'll notice they handed out Bernie signs.
Yes.
Under the Hillary font, they had basically collected the other homemade Bernie signs. I think the concern was, and I think it was probably shared by him, that if Bernie came on in the middle of the program, everything after that would be, you'd have the Bernie signs going up and you'd have protests. I think there was, I think that was it. And I think so they put him last to avoid that. And I think that was smart. And it also looked functions as leverage. People wanted to stay until he was there. After Bernie speaks, you know, as a parent, you go through this quite a bit when your kid's at a recital, right? There's 20 kids giving the piano recital. After the 10th kid, you sort of want to go. If your kid is not going till 19, you stay. If your kid's number 11, you start to have a debate. Now, the analogy in the convention hall would be Bernie's spoken, I may go out with a bang and just start heckling and see if I can't get myself arrested or kicked out of here. I mean, I don't, you know,
right.
I have no, I'm not privy to any of this, but.
But what about the speech itself? I thought that he did as good a job as you're going to get in doing what he had to do.
I thought his speech was great. And I thought that, I think I mentioned this with Cenk and Anna, that when he said about the TPP in the...
yeah, we have that sound as well, which we
can
do.
All right, well, let's go to the fun half and play this stuff. But,
okay.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll go into the fun half. I'm going to hopefully get some more interviews. Did an interesting interview with the vice chair of the AFT. This is a teachers union. One of the two big national teachers union, they came out, they endorsed Clinton very early. It was interesting. It's fun talking to the vice chairman because I don't know how much they get as much attention, and they're willing to talk a little more about things. They're not as on message as the chair sometimes is. And of course, he's from Illinois. And so, I don't know, we may hold it for next week because it's really more about what the teachers union is hoping to get from the next president and what their perspective is on it, and also on Obama. All right, so you're writing up the show? The part you're writing up? Michael, your microphone is still on. All right, we're going to take a quick break, head into the fun half. Folks, don't forget, your membership makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Quick break. We'll be right back.